Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to a very special episode of Eureka, where I'm going to be sharing some of my absolute favourite moments from the show. Our first clip comes from a question we asked in October. If humans go extinct, what animal will take our place? It's fascinating to think about what the planet might look like when we aren't around anymore. We discussed what the key factors are to becoming a dominant species. We took a look at what animals have survived previous extinctions, and we looked at how animals are already changing in response to climate change. Here's a clip where Rick got very excited about giant insects.
The world, the Earth, has changed massively over, you know, sort of geological time.
Right.
So the climate has been wildly different. And you're looking at a planet that is, how old is the Earth? 4.5 billion years?
Yeah.
Something like that. Life evolved about 3.8 billion years ago. Nothing very exciting for, you know, like a long, long time, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then eventually stuff starts kicking off in the sea. And so we're right at the sharp end, even with that long sort of 250 million year, 300 million year period that Dr. Elsa just mentioned. But in that time when you've had animals around, the world has been wildly, wildly different. So big fluctuations in temperature, ocean acidity, levels of carbon dioxide, levels of oxygen. And one of my favourite bits, I suppose, is where, so quite early on, so 300 million years ago, say, in the Carboniferous. As the name implies, the Carboniferous was fantastic for plants. So carbon dioxide levels were quite high, which is great for plants because they're photosynthesizing, and that's how they eat effectively.
Yeah.
And they're then producing a lot of oxygen because that's a byproduct.
Yeah, yeah.
And so oxygen concentrations in the air are really quite high. And you sort of think, I wonder if that's made a particular difference or anything. And it did make a difference to insects. So insects
didn't
are around.
Did they get massive?
Yes, they did. And it's great. This is the kind of stuff that immediately just makes people grin when you think about it. So the reason that insects are small now is that, so, I mean, obviously, this is pretty clear. They don't have lungs or anything. The way that they breathe is they have these kind of little tubes called, I think, called trachea, but I might have made that up. And they sort of just absorb oxygen from the air. And there's a limit to how much oxygen they can get in. Yeah. And that limits their body right. size. But if you increase the concentration of oxygen in the air, then they can get more oxygen in and they can grow. And right. did they grow? Yes, sir, they grew. So you've literally got dragonflies that are the size of hawks.
Oh,
you've got not millipedes, but something that was similar to a millipede, the size of a person. It's great stuff.
I presume there wasn't anything like us around.
No,
but we wouldn't have grown anything any larger, would we? Because we don't process oxygen different. In
yeah,
that
yeah,
way.
No. Yeah, but it wouldn't have made that right. difference to us. So, it would have made some differences, but
so
not
we,
that.
So we would have been this size.
Yes.
And the insects would have been the same size.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
So there's a kind of, a reasonable, so we'll go on to talk about this, but there's a reasonable sort of guess that if we were wiped out, something that would happen is vegetation would suddenly, you look at all the sort of monoculture that covers so much of the land, that's going to disappear, and very quickly you're going to get vast amounts of vegetation and forestation all over the globe, and then that's going to increase the amount of oxygen, and suddenly insects once again are like,
get huge
now then, and so you genuinely could have things with exactly the same body plan, but like a praying mantis the size of a dog.
Oh, no, thank you.
Yeah.
So we become prey,
and then like massive. Well, we're already dead, remember?
Yeah, but there could be like one or two survivors who keep a small lineage of humans going.
I'm just getting rid of us. I think you've
got
to just
get rid
of us.
Can you imagine living alongside that?
I don't really want to. I feel like a praying mantis is taking care of business.
No, I'll be back on the vodka again. Yeah. Just like drink myself to death.
I'd rather that than getting done by a praying mantis.
Burning Lewis Dartnell's book. Where's the big insects, Lewis? And you didn't mention the big insects.
And also our friends, the cockroach, they have survived all five mass extinctions, of course. And they would probably get big as well. Oh. So you probably got, you know, the size of big rats.
Literally a shiver just went down my spine.
Yeah, huge cockroaches.
Rat roaches.
Scurrying around, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I'm not going
for that. So that's a possibility.
Recently, there's been an increasing amount of research to suggest that repeated concussions can have serious consequences. We wanted to find out more by asking, is concussion a real issue in sports right now? In this clip, we talk about how concussions can affect people in different ways.
It's quite a broad spectrum of things that you can see off the back of a concussion. And so we got Hannah to explain the kind of things you might see.
So I guess blackout, something that we can all recognise, sort of being knocked out, vomiting, dizziness, I guess they're the kind of standout concussion symptoms, but these can be kind of much more minor. Again, with the subconcussive, you might not feel any of those things kind of straight off the bat. But I think, you know, concussion can manifest very differently in different people. Some people have an outpouring of emotion. There's been rugby players who have been on the side of the pitch and just burst into tears. And that's not because, like, you know, they're really hurt, but it's kind of that's where the concussion is manifested with them. So it isn't a kind of one size fits all situation, which I think also again makes it much more difficult to manage or to kind of attempt to manage, because it doesn't look the same for everyone. Something like a blackout, obviously we know what that is, but people can still black out whilst being conscious. You know, there's players that have said that they have finished a game, driven all the way home, and then not known how they've got there. Driving for 2 hours to get home, or, you know, players not remembering the second half of the match. They've just kind of got through on adrenaline. So they've blacked out during play, but they're still active. It's a minefield.
So that just sounds awful.
Mm.
Like there's actually so much that can happen if you injure the brain.
Yeah. It's sort of, it should be obvious, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's why you don't drop people on their heads, isn't it? You know, it's sort of like, you know that the head is, it's kind of vital and important. But actually, this is a, you know, a whole range of human activities where we basically permit bad things to happen to the head.
And you compare it to the fact that I can really vividly remember my mum saying, every time you hit your head, you lose 100 brain cells.
Yeah, I think you've said that before.
That's, I mean, made up, but also probably true. Not the number necessarily, but you are definitely like doing yourself a
mischief.
It's
not doing you any good, is it?
It's not doing you any
good. It's not just like a punch on the arm.
And the brain is incredibly sophisticated. And of course, if you're damaging it, there are going to be some unpleasant consequences.
Yeah.
And I think actually something that we can't really go into that much just because we don't quite understand it, but is really worth mentioning, is that when it comes to people experiencing concussions differently, there is a real difference between men and women. So women sustain, for some reason, much more severe concussions and take longer to recover. Not enough evidence at the moment to say why that is, and it needs more investigation and research. Hopefully that will happen. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
So some sort of possible explanations are, and this one is, I think, feels plausible. Just on average, women's neck muscles and necks are thinner.
Yeah, yeah.
So the neck is, there's less muscle in the neck and it's less strong and therefore slightly less able to act as a buffer, really.
Yeah,
to
it's a big absorbing knock less energy,
to the head.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So that's one explanation. There's some really interesting stuff around the effect of hormones. So, and again, this is small sample size stuff, but it looks like at different stages of a woman's menstrual cycle, a concussion will be better or worse, which is sort of like really hard to get your head around why that might be, to the extent that people have suggested that taking contraceptive, so a contraceptive that effectively, in very broad terms, a sort of contraceptive pill just evens out the hormonal levels.
Right.
And if you were to take something like that, it might improve your recovery and severity of concussions.
Right. Which is this is clearly something we don't know a lot about, though, isn't it?
Don't know very much at all about it. No.
Right.
But it's being worked on. There's some pretty compelling evidence around, but nobody really knows
right,
why.
Not
going to understand where the causality is.
The number of smokers in the UK has been declining for quite some time, but plenty of young people are picking up vaping instead. Do we know how dangerous it is? This next clip comes from an episode where we asked whether vaping could be our next public health emergency.
So vaping's been around for, 15 years?
Yeah, 20 tops. Well, for our friend, maybe 20.
Our early adopter. But more and the thing that just anecdotally I'm seeing and hearing about a lot from teachers actually in schools is that young people are really using it a lot more. Do we have any research about the accessibility of vaping for young people?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, what you see is like bright colours and fruity flavours as well, you know, are obviously the thing. A bit like, you know, when Alcopops sort of first came onto the market, the idea of mixing fruit juice with, you know, with alcohol, and all of a sudden you had something that was really palatable to young people.
Yeah.
And I think this is a kind of similar thing, but I asked Dr. Katie whether this is, in fact, attracting more young people.
So there are studies about the associations between vaping and smoking and young people vaping before they start smoking. And one of the top lines from the report is that if you don't smoke, don't vape. And vaping isn't risk-free, particularly for young people who've never smoked. But obviously you do get people vaping first and then smoking first. However, the evidence suggests that youth are also likely to smoke first and then vape first. I think it's just that a lot of the focus is on the vaping and transitioning to smoking. And again, the evidence suggests that kids who try stuff try lots of different things. So if you try vaping, you also are more likely to try smoking, not because of the vaping, but because you're a person in a certain setting or or part of a certain group or in a certain environment, that means you're likely to try both products, not that the vaping causes the smoking.
So essentially, just if you're the sort of person who is interested in trying something new, interested in sort of seeking novelty, then you might try vaping, and then you might also try smoking, but that's more about you than it is the vape.
So you'll be on the statistics as maybe having vaped first and therefore, you know, and then gone on to smoke. Therefore, you know, they see it as a gateway. But
actually, it's not causal.
No, I don't think there's much evidence that it really is causal.
Mm.
That said, I think there's a lot of doctors and medical professionals who are sort of starting to say, no, you know, we've got to stop vaping because it's going to lead to at least a generation hooked on nicotine. And they're we're going to have this sort of terrible sort of healthcare catastrophe coming. So the guy called Andrew Bush, right, who's a consultant pediatric chest physician at Royal Brompton Harefield Hospitals, he said in The Guardian, "I'm concerned that we are sleepwalking into a public health catastrophe with a generation of children hooked on nicotine." And he was part of a group that put out this statement from the European Academy of Pediatrics. And I'll read it. So they said, "The EAP notes that nicotine is itself a drug of addiction with toxicity to the fetus, child and adult. And were vapes only to contain nicotine, their use to create a new generation of addicts would be rigorously opposed. However, e-cigarettes include numerous unregulated chemicals, including known carcinogens, whose acute and long-term toxicities are unknown. The EAP asserts that there is incontrovertible evidence that the acute toxicity of e-cigarettes is greater than that of traditional tobacco smoking." So it's like, whoa, that's a very strong statement.
That's strong stuff, and I think I've got a number of issues with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a study published in March that said there's no gateway effect. You know, you can't find it.
Irrespective of the gateway effect, that European Academy of Pediatrics quote is mad on a number of levels, I think. Firstly, they're saying if the vape only contained nicotine, they would still oppose that because it creates a new generation of addicts. But you're not telling me what is wrong with nicotine. Like, what is nicotine doing that is bad for someone? Like, they're saying there's toxicity to the fetus, child and adult. I don't think I've ever seen anyone claim that or back that.
No.
So, I mean, you can't just make it up.
Also, toxicity is too vague a term, isn't
really
it?
Vague.
You know, so... Anyway, there's
nothing wrong. Like, I suppose my point is, there's nothing wrong with being addicted to something if that thing doesn't cause you any harm, is there?
Well, I don't think so.
If I'm addicted to exercise, I mean, for example,
I'm addicted to caffeine. You know, unashamedly,
and I think I am as well. If I don't drink caffeine, then I get a headache. But
yeah, I
just do drink caffeine. So yeah, fine.
Exactly.
And
so because it's widely available,
what is the issue? Like, I don't think
it's doing me any harm. People would say, it affects your heart health but not to any significant degree. Look at me, I'm just fit as a butcher's dog. So,
I mean, I look at you and I think this guy, what, 51? But he's 52. So.
But I mean, the thing is, so I guess my point of reading that out is, on the one hand, our experts for this program are saying, there's no evidence that it's actually problematic and we're not seeing toxicity levels higher than their sort of average population.
Doesn't look like a gateway.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a gateway. Mm. And then other groups of professionals are saying, this is a catastrophe in waiting kind of thing. And so there's no sort of consensus, and there's actually confusion really about it at the moment. And fundamentally, are you going to, have you ever succeeded in stopping young people smoking or taking nicotine or other drugs? Nobody's ever succeeded in that.
Is this coming from, and apologies for a sort of vague pun in what I'm about to say, that scientists have had their fingers burnt in the past by tobacco companies, and now they are just on red alert that they just cannot bear the thought of that happening again, what happened with cigarettes?
Maybe, yeah.
Which, to be fair, is a legitimate...
Yeah. It's sort of
an unconscious
bias. It's almost like
unscientific.
It's sort of like a conflict of interest in the other direction, in a way, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like you're so concerned not to endorse anything to do with big tobacco, quite understandably, that you actually might be overreacting to what's going on in this particular instance.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah. You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Almost all of us will be affected by cancer in some way during our lifetimes, so Rick and I were fascinated to be joined by Dr. Kat Arney to find out whether we'll ever find a cure. Here's a clip from our episode, Can We Beat Cancer?
I suppose there's a slight issue with the way that we frame the discussions around cancer, which is we're looking for a cure for cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is definitely not going to be a single cure for cancer. I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah. And we already have different drugs that work better for different cancers, don't we?
Yeah. I'm quite nervous about sort of bigging up any result too much, because I think there's a lot of that,
yeah.
And I think it's quite, I think it'd be it can be quite sort of psychologically difficult for people with cancer sort of seeing quite grabby headlines about stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you see a headline saying, this cancer drug looks like it's working perfectly. Yeah. And they're immediately like, why aren't I on that?
Yeah.
I should be on this. Yeah. I'm not getting the right thing. Like, it's just sort of, it's tricky. And I think you have to be careful. But with all that said, in June this year, I think it was June, there was a really small trial. So it was 18 patients who had rectal cancer. And all of them had gone through some really, like, tough treatments. So chemotherapy and radiotherapy. And surgery, a lot of them, you know, needing like colostomy bag, like they're, you know, in quite a bad, so sort of effectively the kind of people where you're like, look, are you up for just trying this thing? And they're like, well, fuck it. Like,
yeah.
At this point, like, why not? And so they all took this drug that is called dostarlimab.
Right.
Yeah. Whatever.
Never heard of it.
No, but you might do in the future. So they took this drug and cancer vanished in all of them.
What?
So all of the available scans. Sometimes you can miss cancer, but they've done everything that we know how to. Exactly. They've done the MRI scans. They've done endoscopies. They've done physical exams. They're as sure as they can be that it's just gone in all of them. They don't need further treatment. And it's genuinely like everyone's a bit like, I mean, quite cautious, because I don't think it's ever happened before with a cancer treatment.
Yeah,
hit rate. And so, but it's sort of, I haven't given it the preamble of don't get took. That is quite exciting.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're kind of done. They don't need my money anymore.
Yeah. Give it to the cold fusion guys. So that's pretty, that feels like a cause for optimism. But that is just one very specific type of cancer. So
yeah.
Rectal cancer.
Okay.
But pretty good.
But if it is that good, I mean, everything in me, like, alarm bells are ringing. It's like, there's going to be so many caveats to this, presumably.
Well, I mean, the first and obvious caveat is 18 is a tiny trial.
They're all very advanced.
Very advanced, but you'd sort of think that would make it
harder,
impressive.
Yeah. Okay. I'm looking for the kind of,
but no, I know,
the Achilles heel of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Really.
I think at the moment, everyone's like, well, We can't see a reason not to celebrate this.
Yeah, it's funny because every time I see one of those headlines, I just never read that thing.
No,
because I'm just like, oh god, here we go, another false hope, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is one where it's legitimate to offer some hope. I think,
right,
in a sea of articles which really have no, the articles are normally sort of fine. Or certainly when you get to the end, anyway, when they do a disclaimer at the end of, like, oh, we only did this in mice.
I mean, you should probably also say that, you know, you don't have any shares in the company that makes this thing.
Oh, no, I do. Yeah, I do. As soon as I read about it back in June, I was like, yeah, cash me in, baby. So it's called, let me find it again, dostarlimab. I highly recommend it to everyone.
So irresponsible.
You get the medication, and this you'll like, and you can see why I invested. It's every 3 weeks for 6 months, and it costs $11,000 per dose.
Oh.
So this guy is ka-ching.
So amazingly, they're not giving it away for free. You know, they've done something great for humanity, and yet they're still saying people have to pay for it. When we started this podcast, I really wasn't expecting any of our experts to use the phrase cockwomble or spunk trumpet, but here we are. The final clip I want to share with you today is a bit of bonus content from our episode, Is Swearing Good For You?, which I have to say was one of my all-time favourites.
We actually got a bit of additional stuff from Emma, because I realised that we hadn't asked her quite an important question, which is, what's your favourite swear word?
Oh, yeah.
I really love the portmanteau ones, things like cockwomble and spunk trumpet, fart badger. But I think actually my favourite swear words, the ones that give me the most joy, are the ones that are uttered by the children in our house. It's possibly going to sound a little outrageous, but when they correctly use a swear word to express their frustration or their dismay or in order to try to be funny, I know that they're carrying on that tradition of, you know, feeling bad at losing at a card game and writing a note to me saying that they are fucking annoyed. There's part of me that wants to point out that there is a C before the K in fucking, but there's also that feeling that, yeah, this flame of swearing, part of what makes us so human, has been passed on to the children in our family. And I'm okay with that.
You don't hear that attitude often enough.
It's so good, isn't it?
Delighted.
Play that to your mum. Your mum, I mean, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
Your mum's good. Your mum's solid. I mean, me and my friends use that still quite a lot. Things that I'm going to do to your mama.
It's got everything.
This is not swearing, but it's a sort of good example of transgression. The hardest I can ever remember my dad laughing was the setting is quite important, I think. We didn't used to sit at a table to eat dinner very often at all. We'd just sit, we'd have trays and we'd just sit and watch the telly.
Yeah.
That was the vibe. But my my nana was staying with us, and so we had eaten at the table. And so it was my dad, my mum, me. I would have been sort of like 9 or 10, something like that. And me and my dad loved Blackadder when I was growing up. Really loved it. Would watch it a lot. And out of nowhere, I've just sort of, I don't know why, I genuinely don't know why I've said it, but I've just quoted a bit of Blackadder. I just said, "I'll do anything to anything, animal, vegetable or mineral." Which is a fantastic line. my dad he's absolutely pissing himself. My mum's obviously disgusted. My nana's disgusted. My dad then feel it. You know how that happens. Like, my dad has basically got like schoolboy hiccups. He knows this is bad.
Yeah.
He knows this is his fault. It was amazing. So, it's, yeah, one of my favourite memories.
Transgression is everything. Thanks for listening to this special compilation. You can listen back to all of those episodes right now wherever you like to get your podcasts. We'll be back with more episodes of Eureka very soon.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more. And join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.